This paper will be part of a book called Logs, Wikipedia, Second Life and Beyond, From Production to Producage. And the title for today is The Future is User-Led, The Path Towards Widespread Producage.
Well, thanks very much. And yeah, this is part of a larger study I'm currently in the process of completing. So I'll try and make do as much as I can with the 20 minutes I've got, but certainly there's a lot more here to be said. And I will really only provide very much the potted version of this. Give you kind of an idea of this. The first draft of the book stood about 190,000 words. I think I've got it down to about 165,000. So in 20 minutes, I might be able to get 1,500 words in or so. Perhaps we'll see how we go with that. But do read the paper, please, as well, if you're interested in this in these ideas a little bit further. And I've got more on my blog as well. So yeah, I want to talk about this idea much more broadly about user-led content creation. I think it plugs really well into what Mark's been talking about as well, because that sort of sense of commercial takeover is always there, of course, and the threat of it is always constantly there. So I want to start in a similar way, perhaps, with just highlighting once again this idea of Web 2 and so on. Many of you will have seen images like this. A number of people have now started to just sort of gather a lot of the logos of all these supposedly Web 2 companies, organizations, websites, and so on, put them together just to show the variety of stuff that's out there. And of course, there's quite a lot here that can be considered. Well, user-led content production, Web 2, social software, whatever we want to call it, whatever terms we might prefer at any given day for this kind of stuff. It happens right across a very broad range of domains, from open source through open publishing, citizen journalism, the Wikipedia, of course, gaming, creative practice, reviews, and so on. And there's probably many more that we're still only exploring in terms of what's actually possible and what realms user-led content production can be applied to. And I think it's very important for us now to start really looking at not just any of these cases individually, not just looking at blogs, not just looking at wikis, not just looking at any individual technologies and any individual realms of knowledge, but actually to try and identify some of the shared characteristics, the shared patterns that actually exist across this. If something like Web 2, for example, is in fact more than just a marketing spiel, then it also points to certain shared characteristics across this Web 2 phenomenon. And if social software and other terms that we're using are anything that really will be useful into the future, then of course, again, it points to something that doesn't just exist in any one of these fields, but in many ways exists right across these fields as well. And that's really what my project is, to identify a little bit more what's actually going on here in a much more broader sense, supported by the technology, but certainly also supported by perhaps a gradual mindset shift towards the possibility of participating in user-led spaces. And in fact, it's a mindset shift, I think, that is very much indicated also by a shift beyond the traditional model of production, which has been with us really only for the last 150 years or so, since the Industrial Revolution and the mainstreaming of industrial production, of course. So I think increasingly we actually need to perhaps reconsider the industrial model of content production, or of physical production in the first place, but also the model of industrial production as it's been applied to information. I think we need to reconsider this perhaps as almost the aberration more than the rule, as not necessarily the best or the only way in which we can deal with information or also deal with physical products. Now, again, in a very, very condensed and very simplified sense, of course, the traditional value chain in industrial production is something like this, a shift from producer to distributor to consumer, the producers who make the goods, the distributors who get them to market, and us as consumers, perhaps, who buy them. And it's actually kind of a very hierarchical kind of process as well, because we as consumers don't really have such a great influence traditionally on the kinds of products that are in fact produced for us, other than through our buying choices in the first place, of course. Producers will look at what sells and what doesn't, and of course shape their production accordingly. But any other kind of feedback loop has really only been developed over the past 50 years or so, with the rise of market research, with the development of greater ways of harnessing focus groups of consumers and other forms of consumer information in developing and updating products. So gradually, from this very basic kind of producer-distributor-consumer trichotomy, we've moved now to something where the producers perhaps are advised by consumers through focus groups, or where perhaps there's a harnessing of customer-made ideas which then lead to further production. So the way that the iPhone, for example, was designed, obviously very much in response to expressions of interest in a technology like that, is an example perhaps for the latter. But ultimately, it's then still Apple determining what's in the iPhone, what the iPhone will look like, what capabilities it has, what networks it functions on. And we as consumers have very little influence over that in the end still. So the overall value chain still exists very much in this format, and has only gradually been joined by kind of a stronger feedback loop back from the consumer to the producer. Now, user-led content production really shifts this around quite significantly. If you think about many of the sides of user-led content production, we're actually getting quite away from this kind of model. We're getting to something quite different. The question is what that actually is. What exactly are we getting to in environments like open source, in environments like citizen journalism, like the Wikipedia, like other spaces where users are becoming increasingly active as content creators? Is it something that can be described through this model of the prosumer, which if you read Toffler, as I think few people actually use that term really do, if you read Toffler, the prosumer is really just a glorified consumer, a professional consumer, someone who has a great knowledge of the things that they consume and thereby is able to consume perhaps in a more targeted fashion, but ultimately still is what Clay Shirky at some point has described as the giant maw at the end of the production line that just, you know, takes everything up and consumes it. So that's probably not quite what it is. My colleague John Hartley has talked about the citizen consumer and the role of consumption for citizenship, and I think there's a lot to that, but I'm still sort of really, I've still got lots of problems with this idea of the consumer here, particularly, of course, in an informational environment where we don't consume information. Information is never consumed in the sense that it's used up. Information is used, but in using it, of course, it doesn't disappear. It doesn't become no longer available for someone else to use as well. So I think that the term consumer overall is actually quite a misnomer, certainly in an informational environment. Charles Leadbeat and Paul Miller have written about pro-am production, and they look at open source. They're looking at even things like amateur astronomy as an example as well. And there's something to that, but again, I'm not sure that someone who just goes to the Wikipedia to change a couple commas here and there can really be described as a pro-am. I don't think they would see themselves really as someone whose amateur participation approaches professional levels. They're really just they're saying, well, okay, I saw an error and I fixed it. That's not really pro-am. So the pro-am really, I think, describes only a small aspect of user-led content creation, perhaps the very high level of user-led content creation. There are other descriptions as well. The industry watchdog Trend Watching has talked about customer-made products, which again goes back to that sort of Apple iPhone model, perhaps, has talked about a new generation C of users who are active in Web 2, active in social networks, active in these spaces of user-led content creation. And I think that goes closer, but of course the generation part is perhaps also here problematic because these people participating in these spaces are not necessarily defined by a shared age range or so. They're actually defined more by a shared attitude and a shared aptitude, I think. The C part I like, which stands there for creativity, and also for the casual collapse, as they call it, of some of the traditional institutions. So the Britannicas of this world and the Microsofts of this world, and we can only hope. So there's something to that, but obviously the generation part is quite misleading. J.C. Hertz has written about corporations who are harnessing the hive. The Sims, for example, is here the particular model, of course, where Max's as a company is harnessing the hive of its participant players who create a lot of content for the Sims and thereby make the game better and more popular and more successful from a commercial point of view. So that, I think, makes some sense as well. But again, there's more there, I think, than any of these descriptions actually let on. And necessarily so, because there's actually a lot still to be studied here as well. I could put, you know, Yochai Benkler on there with this idea of commons-based peer production, which for me, I think is just really a mouthful, and it'd be nice to find something a little bit more directly intuitive to describe it. Michelle Balance has written about peer-to-peer production models and so on. So there's a lot of different descriptions of this, and to which I'd like to add my own, A, because I can, and B, because I think we still really need to work out exactly what terms best describe what's going on there. One problem I have with any of this is really this remaining idea of production as what's going on here, because I think we're really not dealing with production, and I don't think we're dealing with products either in these environments. Clay Shirky, for example, has said that the Wikipedia is not a product, it's a system. And I think that goes somewhere towards really accurately describing what's going on there. But the system, I think, highlights for me too much the technology part. I think the Wikipedia, if anything, is a process rather than a system, a technologically supported process, a process that is supported by the wiki as a system, but it's actually a process first and foremost. And what happens here, and I've just put these up there, I'm not going to talk about them in detail, but if you think about something like the Wikipedia, and more so perhaps if you think about any particular entry in the Wikipedia, they're not actually products. They're not products like the Encyclopedia Britannica. If you think about Linux, it's not a product so much as an artifact of an ongoing process of development. If you think of any entry in the Wikipedia, if you think of any piece of open source software, what you see right now, what you access right now, what you download right now might be different the next hour, the next day, the next month. So what we're seeing there is not actually a version like, you know, Windows 2000 or Windows Vista is a version of the Windows operating system, or a version like the 2006, 2007 edition of Encyclopedia Britannica is a version of that encyclopedia. What we're seeing at any one point is really just a very temporary revision of the content, which can very quickly change again to the next revision and so on. Might be reverted as well, might be vandalized and then put back again and so on. So what we're seeing there is really just very, very temporary artifacts of an ongoing process of development, which involves, of course, the users very actively as participants in that process. So that also means, of course, that we're not really consumers of these products anymore. We're actually participants in that ongoing process of development, which generates these temporary artifacts. And of course, if we are looking at business models, the business model actually changes as well from selling products in the way that Microsoft does and the way that Britannica does to perhaps developing services around this ongoing user-led process of content development. And that's, of course, one of the big questions and one of the questions that the corporations that Mark's talked about, for example, still have a lot of trouble with, actually working out how to do anything else than to try and recolonize that space, to turn it back into products, to turn it back into something that can be sold as products through iTunes or otherwise. Okay, so if this is true, if we're moving beyond products then, if we're moving beyond production, if we're moving beyond something that can simply be seen in traditional industrial production terms, in the terms that we've all grown up with and generations have grown up with since the start of the Industrial Revolution and the point at which the industrial model became the predominant one. So if that's all changing, then we really have to start thinking about, well, what's actually replacing it or at least altering it? It's probably not going to go away altogether, of course, and I don't want to be claiming too much here, but we're certainly, if we're seeing a shift here towards a greater role for user-led content creation, then really what's actually going on there and what are the new characteristics of what's going on here? And for me, these are the four I've come up with, which I think describe most of what's taking place here. These are, I think, the core characteristics of what I will call produce search in a minute. And I think they apply right across. If you think about open source, if you think about citizen journalism, if you think about the Wikipedia, if you think about any of these other user-led spaces, by and large, they apply. In some better than others, and I think that may be a problem down the track for some of the spaces where they don't quite apply. But these are, I think, the four that I'd like to posit here as the shared characteristics. And they're actually slightly different, unfortunately, from the paper I submitted because I've kept working on this. So these are the ones I'm going with at this point. They're obviously open for participation in these spaces. And the ongoing process of participation, of contribution, of content development is organized through an ongoing process of communal evaluation of what's been submitted, what's been contributed. And of course, you know, by virtue of that, also of the contributors who are doing the contributing themselves. So any evaluation of the content that you provide also reflects back on you as a contributor, of course, as a member of the community. Out of this then rises not a hierarchy of participation, not a fixed kind of system of leaders, but actually something that can be better described as a heterarchy, as a kind of a model with its ups and downs, which has a number of leaders, which is also quite fluid because some people might emerge as leaders of particular aspects of the Wikipedia or an open source project or anything else for a while until that aspect is solved. And then others perhaps take over from that to deal with other current problems. So it's a very fluid heterarchy and it's based really, ideally at least, on the merit of participants as participants. It's very much organized ad hoc in many of these environments. And what they're working on is, as I've said already, very much a sense of unfinished business, unfinished artifacts, necessarily always unfinished artifacts, things that will never reach an endpoint. There's never going to be the perfect entry on Perth or quantum physics or something in the Wikipedia. There's never going to be the final version of Linux, which is different in a sense from the traditional model, which kind of pretends to us, at least, that the version of Windows Vista that we can buy now is the best version of Windows that, you know, is possible at this point. And then, of course, next Tuesday, there'll be updates that fix it. And of course, this is always a continuing process of content development. And the process can be described as evolutionary, as iterative. And I'd like to describe it as palimpsestic as well, going back to the medieval idea of the palimpsest as a repeatedly overwritten text, which is very, very visible, of course, in the Wikipedia, if you look at the edit history. And in fact, the other practice of medieval monks as well, that sort of writing ongoing commentary in the margins of these very rare books as they were at the time, and thereby actually having a discussion about what these passages mean, how best to interpret them and so on, that was also part of that practice. And of course, all of this can really only happen if it's based on models of common property as enshrined through Creative Commons or open source licenses and so on. And again, where that's not the case, many of these spaces will, I think, run into trouble further down the track. And at the same time, although all of this is common property, it's still possible for individuals to derive individual rewards from their participation. In some spaces more than others, certainly in open source, we've seen that many open source programmers who are recognized as leaders in their craft are also able to make a handsome living from the knowledge that they've gained by participating in open source, not directly by selling open source, obviously, but by selling open source services, by hiring out their knowledge to others. So there's certainly also actual financial capital that's able to be gained here, but if not that, then certainly also status capital within these spaces and possibly beyond. Okay, so these are, for me, these are the four key characteristics. We can describe them in various other ways as well, but I think they really encapsulate what's happening in this area of user-led content creation. And in fact, if I then would want to draw the value chain, it's actually much more about the content than about the individuals who participate in a sense. We are really starting with existing content, which in the first place we're simply using, of course, as users of that content. But in a sense, the content and the spaces within which it exists also interpolate us as potential producers, as potential creators, further updaters, contributors to this content. And so what comes out at the end, if we choose to participate in this way, is again a further revision of that content, not a new version necessarily, but certainly a further revision of that content, a further incremental change of that content. So that perhaps is actually what the value chain looks like in those spaces of user-led content creation, or of what I will call producage. And I call it producers because really what these people are participating as is neither simply as users nor simply as producers, but as a mixture, a hybrid, an increasingly inextricable mixture of both as well, where really you are at any one point both the user and the producer, or what I would call a producer of content. And this is, of course, the Wikipedia model, the open source model, and many other cases, the same sort of thing. And I think I've actually mentioned most of these already. But simply, a very important point to make is that these distinctions between producers, distributors, and consumers certainly no longer apply in this space. There are some people who are still simply using Wikipedia, of course, no doubt. But for all of them, it's possible to become a producer. And for some of them, they become it more than others. So the mixture between production and use, the mixture between participation and simple access is different for all participants. But for all of them, it is possible to become a producer. And that then perhaps is actually people like that actually form this kind of Generation C that trend watching talks about. And it's quite possible, of course, that, you know, a little bit further down the track, as people grow up perhaps with these opportunities, we might well see an actual Generation C that really has grown up natively with this. But for now, I'll call this producage. I'll call this really a hybrid form of interacting with content in a productive way. And then ultimately, again, the value chain overall, the overall environment looks more like this. It's not really a chain anymore, obviously. If this looks a little bit like a Petri dish, that's probably quite appropriate because, well, I can't really avoid the pun, but we are dealing with culture here, of course. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I think, I mean, you can take the metaphor too far, but actually what we're dealing with here is also an environment in which, of course, these communities don't just emerge fully formed, but they grow from little germs of ideas, little contributions, kernels of contributions, literally the Linux kernel, as Linus Torvalds first made it available to the public. And around this then gradually grew a community and grew the Linux operating system as we know it now. So there are certain contributions that are being made at the start of this process as well, both in terms of actual content, but also in terms of setting up the spaces, like the Wikimedia Foundation setting up the Wikipedia Wiki as a space within which this can happen. So it's both about setting up that petri dish, as well as seeding it with some information, some ideas, some processes, some community perhaps that are really the kernel from which a larger community, a larger process, a larger project can actually grow. And of course, on the other side too, there are some real tangible outcomes that are increasingly becoming available. Content that is very much of commercial grade in many cases. Certainly that's the case in the open source community. I would argue that's also increasingly the case within the citizen journalism environment, within the Wikipedia as well. And, you know, we can argue about the nature study that was done of content in the Wikipedia, but certainly some areas in Wikipedia are of very good quality these days. So that's the one aspect. But on top of that, of course, there's also a lot of other activity that starts to happen around this. There's an activity of users actually or harnessing that content for their own purposes. There's an activity of people providing services based on that content or providing services back to the community as well. And of course, there are a lot of other commercial activities, if that's what we want to focus on in this case as well. And perhaps, I've thought quite a bit recently about Pierre Levy's ideas around collective intelligence. And those of you who've read Convergence Culture by Jenkins know that he's been thinking about this a lot as well. And while Levy talks about collective intelligence there, I say in a very French way, of course, that you know, is never quite, you can't really quite get hold of it. But I think there's actually a lot in there that further needs to be unpacked. And I think there's a lot of potential here. There is a potential, and in a conference like this, perhaps it's the most important one, for new forms of creativity, new forms of art, new forms of development. What my colleague Jean Burgess talks about as vernacular creativity, and what Jenkins talks about as a return to a shared folk culture, again, going back to perhaps pre-industrial days of a similar shared folk culture that might have existed at that point, but in a very much in a new inflection. There are also questions around sustainability, because all of this, much of this relies still on voluntary labor. Intellectual property is another huge aspect that still hasn't been explored fully. And I would argue, and I do in the paper, that it's actually about educating users, educating participants, much more about how these spaces work, and particularly how their own intellectual property might need to be protected in these spaces. Trust, responsibility, liability, and so on, of course. Again, this is also about educating people to better understand how to evaluate the quality of content that they find in these spaces, the Wikipedia perhaps being the obvious example here. But also perhaps really a move towards a new collective intelligence that enables new cultural and social and economic structures. The economic side, you know, again, there are a number of models now, and I think the J.C. Hertz idea of harnessing the hive is something that we have to unpack further as well. There's actually a number of ways in which the hive of these communities might be used. And I think what Hertz talks about is actually not so much harnessing the hive, but perhaps a kind of a harvesting of the hive for commercial gain. Harnessing, I think, is actually more by producers for producers, whereas the harvesting is actually, well, maybe it's not even so much that here, but it's actually you know, much more of a use of what's been created by the community for outside purposes. There's also, of course, issues around how to support this producer, perhaps also even through commercial services. And there's also a question around the spaces that are being provided for this. And I think particularly in gaming now, which I think we can describe to some extent as producer as well, certainly spaces like Second Life, I think, very much fit that category. There's also questions around, well, are people actually harboring these communities, or are they in the end hijacking them? Because you constantly have to pay perhaps for continued access to these spaces. And if Linden at some point decides that they're going to release a huge range of new land, then your investment in the land that you've got actually goes down. It's simple economics. So there are actually a lot of questions around the the buy-in that people have into these spaces and the extent to which that buy-in might be hijacked, might be exploited from a commercial point of view. Okay, last slide. And this is, I think, for me, the most hopeful aspect of all of this as well, well beyond any of the commercial stuff, well beyond anything else. But I'd like to actually go back to some of the ideas that Douglas Rushkoff has written about when he wrote about the renaissance that might be brought on by open source software development as he saw it at that point. Because I think we can actually describe politics as it exists today very much through that industrial model as well. There are producers of politics, the politicians, the pundits, the journalists, they're distributors. Again, the journalists, the mass media, the editors and so on. And there are us as consumers perhaps of politics. I think the model, you know, by and large still holds there. Now, if producerage, if that form of user-led content creation, user participation is translated into a political environment, what might a producerage-based politics actually look like? Are we able perhaps to reclaim, in a sense, democracy, reclaim more active participation in democracy in much the same way that citizen journalists have reclaimed active participation in news coverage, that Wikipedians have reclaimed active participation in defining and determining the representations of knowledge that are contained in an encyclopedia? I think there are real possibilities. There will no doubt also be a backlash. And in fact, not just in authoritarian regimes, but certainly also in many Western media. And Australia has been a really good example in recent months for this, in the battle between the established journalists and popular opinion, which is now very much divergent from what journalists are writing about. So again, there are a lot of opportunities here, and I think we need to further explore what's actually possible here. But on that possibly positive note, that perhaps producers might help that for us to reclaim, active participation, perhaps, a re-democratization of democracy itself. I'll leave it here. And I'm certainly very interested in hearing your questions and comments.
We have time for one insightful question. This relates to the Generation C thing a little bit. The stats seem to suggest that, as you said, there's a minority of users of these systems are actually the ones who are doing the producing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a sort of 80-20 split or something. What are the implications of that split for your, you know, positive implication at the end? And could we see a kind of, you know, some kind of class structure where your political agency is tied to your literacy in, you know, social work?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, Jenkins talks about the idea of the participation gap as kind of something that is even more, that even further narrows down participation from what we used to talk about as the digital divide. I mean, it's just shifting the boundaries to and perhaaps an ever smaller community unless we actually try and do something about that. And again, education, I think, has a huge role to play here in guiding more people, helping more people to really realize the potential of active participation in any of these spaces, because all of them, you know, again, going back to Hartley's idea of the citizen consumer, I think, forget about the consumer, but the active citizenship that's embodied in active participation in any of these spaces is incredibly important. I think education's got a lot to do about this. And if it doesn't happen, then yes, we're not only going to see a division into people who've got access to the networks and not have access to the networks, who've got, you know, any of the required kind of inputs that you need to really participate, but it's then also about the attitude or the aptitude to participate, which might be an even smaller subset of all of these people. And that would be, for democracy, it would be incredibly threatening, I think, because it further divides us into people who rely on mass media, who are passive participants, perhaps, and people who are actively participating in these spaces. Without going to stereotype people, of course, either. I mean, you know, it's easy to kind of just overstate the role of mass media as just sort of feeding people information. But at the same time, this participation gap is real and is a real worry, I think. Yeah.
And unfortunately, we'll have to stop there, but we have a long open-ended show in which Axel can be
absolutely
harassed or discussed or congratulated depending on your perspective.